Okay, we've just gone live on the internet. Welcome to room 412 of the State Capitol here in Pierre. This is a public comment hearing, the fifth we've had on this docket, which is HP07-001, and that deals with Keystone Pipeline's application to build a pipeline through this the eastern part of South Dakota. The purpose of tonight's hearing is for us to get some feedback from real people, look them eyeball to eyeball, and determine what their thoughts are about this project. Now, we also had four of these meetings during the summer in Yankton, Alexandria, Clark, and Britton. The format for tonight will be a little different, but I think the general ground rules will be the same. What we seek is to get as much input in as efficient a method possible from you all, anybody that's here. We are going to ask that you identify yourself, you state your name, and your place of residence. We do have a court reporter here this evening, and so we would ask that you speak loudly and clearly. And for the benefit of the folks who are listening in on the internet, we would ask that you make sure you sit up here in the witness seat and that you pull that microphone as close to you as possible. That way you won't need to shout or use your speechifying voice. You can just talk conversationally and everybody will be able to hear you. I think it's very important to note that tonight's process is not the totality of what the commission is doing on this docket. Commission has been engaged in a multi-month process of evaluating this project. And this week and next, we have a very evidence-intensive, very time-intensive hearing to where people will be sworn in, where evidence will be offered, witnesses will be cross-examined, and objections to evidence will be made. That looks and feels a lot more like a court case, and tonight we want it to feel a little bit more like a town hall meeting. So that we can make sure that we hear from people, we do have a few ground rules that we'd ask you to kind of help us make sure we get pointed in the direction we want to go. First off, the formal process that I just described is for interveners, those people who are legally recognized parties to the case. Tonight isn't for them. Tonight is for the real people who didn't file a bunch of fancy legal paperwork, but just want to tell us what they think about this project. We would also ask that those people who have long comments, that they wait so that we can let the people who maybe only have 30 seconds or 2 minutes or 5 minutes, that those people have an opportunity to speak their mind, and they don't have to wait around until 11 o'clock at night before they get their opportunity to say a few words. So again, we'll request people with short commentary, less than 5 minutes, go first. We have transcripts of all of the four public hearings that we had this summer. And we would ask that you not repeat commentary or comments or concerns from those meetings. Now, a little bit is fine. If you need to set the stage for some new information or new concerns you have, that's great. We want to hear them, and we want to hear that. But getting it into a record, getting your general concerns into the record a second time isn't any better than getting it in once. And so please try to avoid too much repetition from what you might have said again in Yankton, Alexandria, Clark, or Britton. With that, we should introduce the folks that are sitting here. I'm Dusty Johnson. I'm a commissioner with the PUC. We've also got commissioners Gary Hansen and Steve Colbeck here. John Smith serves as the commission's general counsel, and he has been the hearing examiner for the formal portion of this two-week hearing. Since there's not a lot of legal speechifying, he decided to take the evening off from running this event. So we do have people from TransCanada Keystone Pipeline, the applicant, here in the room. We've got people from the Public Utilities Commission staff here in the room. Because we want to keep this moving, if you've got a question, I would ask them to make every attempt to try to get to you and get your question answered at a break or after this is done. Some people complain that at the public hearings this summer, questions were asked, and then maybe it took too long for staff or commissioners to answer it, and we didn't get to hear from enough concerns from folks. So we'll try to run it that way. If anybody's got any objections or suggestions as to how we can make it better, let's hear them now. For the first time in my life, I appear to have approached perfection. I'm sure that thought in my mind will be eradicated in just moments. So with that, let's go ahead and open it up to any non-interveners that have relatively short comments.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson and other commissioners. My name is Mary Duval. I live in Pierre. I work for the South Dakota Farm Bureau, and I just wanted to relate to you very briefly. Our delegates voted at our annual convention November 16th and 17th in strong support for the Keystone Project. Agriculture is a huge user of energy. We think that a stable supply is good not only for America, but also for America's farmers and ranchers. We also think that it's good for us to do business with our neighbors to the north. They've demonstrated a capacity to be a very friendly country to us and a very stable country. A couple of other things that we really like about the Keystone Project are the tax dollars that will help our school systems, the contractor's excise tax and sales taxes that will benefit the state as a whole. We see that as a positive. We realize that the affected landowners may face some inconveniences, but we found Keystone personnel always willing to meet with us, willing to respect the rights of landowners, and willingness to be good stewards. And our final point, very briefly, is we think transporting energy via a pipeline is preferable to transporting it over the highways. And that is the conclusion of my comments. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Duval. Appreciate that. Who else? Yes, sir. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Pete Bartison, and I'm the business manager for the Labor's Union Local 620 for the state of South Dakota, and we are based out of Sioux Falls. This pipeline project will be beneficial in many ways to the state of South Dakota. Number one, this project will employ between 100 to 150 South Dakotan laborers to man and complete this project. These are good paying jobs that will also provide health insurance, prescription medication cards, dental and optical insurance, along with a $10,000 death benefit and a pension plan at no cost to the workers. These benefits not only cover the worker, but also the spouse and children. There is also daily travel pay on this project. Number two, this project will bring in substantial amounts of revenue for business owners throughout the state of South Dakota. I would also like to mention that most of the supplies and materials needed will be purchased locally. We feel that this is a win-win situation for South Dakota workers, businesses, and landowners involved. Thank you.
Mr. Bartison?
Yes.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Mr. Martin, what was the local union?
Labor's Union Local 620 based out of Sioux Falls.
All right, thank you.
And we're involved with a lot of wind farm projects, ethanol plants, so we're big in the energy.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Who else would like to make some comments? Yeah, please come, sir. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Byron Olson. I'm a tribal archaeologist for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, and I wanted to appear this evening to express our concern about the lack of protection of cultural resources along the pipeline. If you look at the corridor of a Trans-Canada pipeline in North and South Dakota, they will have checked 23% of that corridor for cultural resources. The remaining 77% will have nothing done on it, which means that anything that's out there, unless it happens to be discovered in the process of construction, will simply be destroyed, and I'm deeply distressed by this situation. It's worth understanding the process by which that was reached, and I think the process is deeply flawed. The applicant, TransCanada, hired a consultant, Intrix, and Intrix in turn hired a archaeological consulting firm based out of Bismarck. That was Metcalf Archaeological Consultants. And prior to the involvement of any federal agency whatsoever, Metcalf contacted the North Dakota SHPO and the South Dakota SHPO, and laid out a scope of work for what they're going to do out in the field, what land will be looked at. Now, it's important to understand that the laws governing cultural resource at a federal level are much different than those at a state level. Your state historic preservation office was created as part of the National Historic Preservation Act federal business, and if the feds are involved, then the SHPO has a lot of authority in telling construction company and contractors what they want to see done out in the field, and that would include, say, looking at more than 23%. If it's a state action, you know, I don't know the ins and outs of South Dakota law, but I assume you would have jurisdiction over state lands and maybe, you know, sites that are listed on the National Register. But it's a much, much, much more restricted process. So what happened chronologically was TransCanada contacted the SHPOs before there was any federal involvement. And it's my understanding from comments I heard from Mrs. Paige Hoskins, she's the review and client compliance officer for South Dakota SHPO, that when Metcalf came in the door, that looked like a private project, not a federal one. And so her authority is governed by state law, which, you know, if they're willing to look at land, gosh, this is great, because normally, you know, they wouldn't have to do anything. After Metcalf had talked with both the North Dakota SHPO and the South Dakota SHPO, a month or so later, it becomes a federal project when the Department of State is brought into the process. And at that point, it's a federal deal. But the Department of State, you know, by their own words, they say this is probably the first and last presidential permit they'll ever do. It's been an arduous thing for them. And they have absolutely no expertise in cultural resource laws, period. So they're relying entirely upon Intrix. Well, the Department of State just saw these agreements that had been developed with North Dakota SHPO and South Dakota SHPO and said, looks good to us. And the problem, of course, was the SHPOs, I think they were kind of left in the dark as to whether this was a private project or one that's governed by federal law. And when Mrs. Hoskins spoke at a meeting at Prairie Nice Casino several, 6 weeks back, I guess, roughly speaking, she said if she had known that she had the authority to intervene, and I think she means she had the authority granted under the federal law, under National Historic Preservation Act, she would have done different than what she did when it would just appear to be her authority was limited to state law. And my comment right now is, first of all, I would urge the South Dakota SHPO to reopen that issue, because I don't think they actually were given a fair shake in the deal. The TransCanada really jumped the gun and went ahead and did these consultations without any federal involvement, period, even though they knew that was going to come. I believe that everything along the pipeline corridor should be looked at. We don't really know what's out there. The records indicate, you know, people have to do a file search and say, what's been found out there before? Well, they looked at 700 and roughly 26 square miles along a 2 mile wide corridor along the pipeline in South Dakota. And what's been found in the past is exactly 10 prehistoric sites. Obviously, many, many more are out there. But that's the state of our knowledge right now. It's just very, very limited. It's just a part of the state where a lot of kind of work isn't done. So it would be valuable for everybody to have some of this done. So I would urge the state to reopen it. I'd urge the state to have 100% of the corridor looked at. And I would urge you as commissioners to support the state SHPO and if they choose to take that course, because I think it's the proper way to go. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mr. Olson.
Yes, sir.
We didn't really discuss that. Commissioner Kolbeck, you're as much the boss as I am. Ask any questions you like, sir.
Do you feel that we can remediate, that's probably a bad word in this, but do you think we can, that if that was done, it would put your mind at ease, a 100% walkthrough?
Oh, I think that would be a very valuable thing to do.
Okay. And where's Standing Rock? I'm sorry.
Standing Rock includes Sioux County in North Dakota and Corson County in South Dakota.
Corson. Okay.
And a bigger portion of our reservation is in South Dakota.
Okay.
The tribe really has had two concerns. I mean, you know, I'm versed in archaeology, so that's why I'm speaking on that issue. The other tribal concern, and I think you was there was a letter from our chairman that was submitted to a meeting earlier, was what happens if the pipe breaks? You know, there's been some waivers on wall thickness and waivers on pressure in the pipe, and it just creates concern because if that stuff breaks, then we know how valuable water is and what happens if you pollute it. So.
Absolutely.
But I would, if you would reopen it and say, we'll look at 100%, gosh, I'd give you thumbs up on that one.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you. And I wrote comments if you would like those.
Oh, if you would provide those to the court reporter, I think that might be helpful.
Yeah.
And if others of you have brought information, it's not an exhibit in the traditional evidence sense, but we would certainly take it and are happy to post that information on our website and make it available to interested persons. I should mention that we don't want this to turn into an alternating public comment TransCanada response. But at the end of the evening, certainly if TransCanada has any comments with regard to what it may be. Gross mischaracterizations or concerns they've got about something people have said, we'd give the applicant an opportunity to respond. So
yes, I summarize my points, and the source of much of that information is a letter that was written by the Department of State to the Advisory Council on Historic Places, and I attached that. It has pertinent statements in there about when the applicant first approached the SHPOs and that kind of stuff. So.
Well, Mr. Olson, if you would, please let the chairman of Standing Rock Sioux Reservation Tribe let him know that we appreciate his letter and the concerns that you and he have offered up.
Thank you much. Thanks, yeah. Appreciate the opportunity.
Again, looking for commenters, generally in a short nature to start with. Good evening.
Hi. Being a former broadcaster, I think this is 3:37, all right? Okay. Good evening. My name is Craig Lawrence, and I live in Sioux Falls. My great-great-grandfather homesteaded near Oneida in 1887, and then after 3 years of grasshoppers and drought, retreated to become an engineer, plat the city of Parker, and then purchase the farm, which remains in our family today. I just say those things to say I'm rooted here. So as I sat here today and listened to the frustration of landowners who are told they must allow someone to dig a trench across their land, I understand that hurt. And I know you understand that hurt too, as we go through that. Nevertheless, I'm here to speak in defense of the pipeline, despite but respecting the pain which it causes the good people who have testified here today. And here's why I'm in support, perhaps even in passionate support. Since the terror of 9/11 struck our country, South Dakotans have responded in greater measure to defend our land than any other state in America. In fact, this afternoon I received confirmation from Major Orson Ward of the South Dakota National Guard in Rapid City that our state has had, since 9/11, a higher percentage of National Guardsmen deployed to the Mideast than any other state in America. Our young men and women are serving over there. Unfortunately, many are dying over there and return to us in flag-draped coffins, and we weep. Why are they dying? In reality, we know it is to assure our nation will continue to receive that to which our president says we are unfortunately addicted, Mideast oil. Our sons and daughters are dying for oil, for our supply. This is a terrible burden for all of us. We want a way out. We all want alternative sources of energy for tomorrow. Indeed, our state is a pioneer in the production of ethanol. But Jeff Broin of Broin Industries, who you know, and Broin Industries being a South Dakota company recognized as the leader in U.S. production of ethanol, Jeff reminds me that even if every bushel of American corn were used to produce ethanol, only 20% of America's energy needs would be provided. It's a fact. We're going to need massive supplies of oil for many decades to come. Mideast oil comes to us at the great price of the lives of our sons and daughters, but also at a great economic price. We are watching the economic future of our children and grandchildren being sucked through a gas pump connected to the sheiks of Araby. In its 2007 fact book, the Clean Fuels Development Coalition reports that America spends $49 billion a year just to protect the pipelines and terminals that deliver Persian Gulf oil. They say if these costs were reflected in the price we pay, the price at the pumps in Pier today would rise by over a dollar a gallon. Canada has the second largest reserves of crude oil on our planet. A pipeline is the cheapest and safest way to get it here, far safer than supertankers who ram the Golden Gate Bridge. Our thrust for oil has placed our nation in a desperate war in the Middle East. Our governor, our president, our leaders in Congress all recognize America's need to be weaned of Mideast oil. It's an urgent and pressing need. Tonight, like it or not, South Dakota is center stage in the fight to free us from Mideast oil. Tonight, responsibility rests here in our nation's great quest to say to the Mideast, to say to them, we don't need your crude anymore. Mr. Commissioners, I know we can trust you to make this pipeline the safest ever built. I know we can trust you to ensure that our landowners continue to be treated fairly and with dignity. That's what we elected you to do, and that's what we see you doing commendably in these hearings. But for America and for our National Guardsmen about to awaken to another lonely and dangerous day, Mr. Commissioners, say yes to Canadian crude. Let it flow through the Keystone Pipeline in South Dakota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lawrence. Sorry, go ahead, Commissioner.
That's fine. Very well said. Appreciate your testimony.
Other comments?
Terry Helms, Aberdeen, South Dakota. I'll make this short and brief. By profession, I'm in the engineering land surveying business. I was fortunate enough to be retained by TransCanada to survey the north third of this project for their easements. In my dealings with TransCanada, two things came to the forefront before I could get a contract with them. And they beat this into our heads that landowners' rights were first and all above everything else that we were going to do. We were not allowed on anybody's property without getting TransCanada's permission 3 days ahead of time. They went to the landowners, sought permission, access points, permission for us to use all-terrain vehicles, and if they weren't allowed, then we had to walk that portion of the project. And if we had any incident, if we damaged a fence post, we had to report that to TransCanada immediately. The second thing that I think they stressed almost as hard was the safety issue from what our workers' compensation ratings were, to our company safety manual. We had to implement safety issues within our company to satisfy them that we continue to use this day because they are very good safety issues. Again, if they told us if they found one of our employees driving down the road talking on a cell phone, our participation with them would be terminated because that was not a safe act. From the day they started with us, safety was the highest priority, right along with landowners' rights. Over the years, I've been in this profession since 1971. My company has had the opportunity to work with power companies, natural gas companies, water companies, highways, railroads, ethanol plants. None of them hold a candle to the requirements that TransCanada put on us. We've worked for Webro Water, East River Electric, Basin Electric, Northern Border Pipeline. Nobody came close to that. So as I look to the future of this pipeline being built through South Dakota, I believe the safety issues will be there. Now I take off my surveyor's hat, put on my engineer's hat, and I, as we walk, or as we have talked for a year concerning water sources, potable water sources, if we look at where that pipeline goes through the state of South Dakota, from the Missouri River east, probably two-thirds of the way to Interstate 90, most of those communities, by the end of this decade, will receive their water from the Missouri River. Those from the Jim River Valley east, most of those people are going to get it out of the Big Sioux River aquifer area, city of Sioux Falls, city of Brookings. You get north up in the Siston area, and they'll take it out of the Peaver aquifer. So they've really kind of split the two water sources in the state of South Dakota, in my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Helms, right? Yeah, great. Thank you. Other comments? We'd be happy to take longer comments at this point if somebody has something more than 5 minutes. 10 minutes? 20 minutes?
You're getting there.
Good evening, sir.
Glenn Cunningham, Mitchell, South Dakota. Born and raised there. Moved back there after 40 years of pipeline engineering, design, and construction. Mr. Hard Act to Follow here covered a lot of my points, but I would like to point out that South Dakota is a 100% taker when it comes to petroleum energy. We're the benefits of the risks that other states take with their 95,000 miles of crude oil gathering and transmission systems, probably 200,000 miles of refined product systems. Those systems were all built basically under the same kind of arrangements that TransCanada proposes for this project. A lot of those projects are over 50 years old and still operating. Every new pipeline project benefits from those that went before. And in the last 15 years, instrumentation such as that used for leak detection, corrosion monitoring, and all that sort of thing has gone up by magnitudes of 10. And those will be applied to this project. I would like to think that this project that they're proposing gives South Dakota the opportunity to contribute to the energy situation. And in the cleanest, safest, least intrusive way possible. No production fields, no processing plants, no tank farms, no terminals. Just a long, welded steel tube running the length of the state where not even a gallon of it is taken off for any purpose whatsoever. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cunningham. Now, that wasn't 20 minutes. You had us all nervous. Other comments of any length? Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Kim McLowry from Elk Point, South Dakota. I'm here as a citizen and engineer that also has worked for the TransCanada pipeline, as Mr. Helms has. And I would like to reiterate everything that Jerry has said, from the safety aspect to landowners' rights. It was very impressive how their corporation pushes those issues. And like you said, Terry said, I've never worked for anybody that has had that type of corporate citizenship, you might call it, to protect the landowners, protect the employees, and the safety of everybody involved. So I'm excited about the project. I think it's a good thing for the nation, big picture-wise. As Mr. Lawrence said, I was in Iraq during the war, and it's not a fun place over there. And we need to grab this. Otherwise, it's going to end up in China. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McLowry, right? McLowry, yeah. Elk Point, this likely won't be the last big energy project you think about. Other comments? Good evening, sir.
Yes, sir. My name is Jim Ahmet. I'm from Brookings, South Dakota. And I guess what I'd like to say in that is that assuming that you grant the permit, I fully believe that they should end up with having bonding taken set in case of that remote chance that there is a leak any place along our pipeline, and have it substantial enough bond to take and cover it for inflation, et cetera, like that over a period of years. Thank you.
Thank you for the suggestion. Mr. Ahmet? Sir, how did you spell your last name?
A-A-M-O-T.
Thanks. Other comments? We have somebody that we feel like we were forced to slight earlier today. So, Ms. Simpson, if I feel like we already got to hear from you. Your husband was a marionette today, I felt like. But if you would like to make a comment, we'd certainly be happy to give you that opportunity. This will help Mr. Smith feel like not quite such a bad guy.
Oh, hey, Mr. Smith, you're not a bad guy.
Now, you don't know that positively.
It's a good thing you're not too.
But I could give you the names of a lot of bad guys I do know. So.
It's a good thing you're not under oath when you say stuff like that.
Well, you can ask me later. I'm Sue Simpson. I'm from Howard, South Dakota. And thank you for mentioning that. I did have a comment that I wanted to make. And first of all, I'd like to say we've heard from people tonight that are really in favor of the project, and that's their opinion, and that is good. And you've heard our testimony this afternoon that the experiences that we have had with land agents. And it really upsets me that we must have got the bad employees at our house or something, because for a company that's supposed to have these high standards and these super employees, there's a lot of landowners in South Dakota that have not seen these qualities come out in the land agents that they've had to deal with. And as a suggestion to you, I would like you to have some land agents come in and testify under oath of what they've done to landowners. I would really like to see that. The comment that I have to make is I'm going to do part of a quote. What we do to the land, we do to ourselves. It makes me wonder, as we leave our land for our children and our grandchildren, what will they have to live with because of what we let happen to the land? That's why we are here today fighting for our land. Thank you. And having it on the internet is wonderful. Be able to sit at home and listen to who chews gum when they talk and who doesn't. It's been real interesting. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Sue. I think we'd rather have you testify than your hubby, okay?
I agree.
Ms. Simpson, you're right. There was just a tremendous demand out there for greater coverage of regulatory events on the Internet. So we've been happy to make it available. We haven't gotten any Internet numbers yet. I suspect at the end of this we'll check, but it wouldn't surprise me if we've got dozens and hundreds of people listening in any given time to this proceeding. So, other comments? We'll give you one more minute to think about it, and during that time I will just mention that if you do go to www.puc.sd.gov, you'll be able to find literally thousands of pages of information on the project, as well as hundreds of letters and emails from citizens both in favor of and opposed to the project. You'll also be able to hear audio archives of three of the four public comment meetings we had this summer, as well as the other commission meetings that we've where we've taken preliminary actions on this particular docket. And you can listen tomorrow and all of the days next week where we are still dealing with this issue. Any other comments? I would just, oh, please. No, that's fine. We were just buying folks like yourself time so they could kind of gather their thoughts and determine what they wanted to say. Go ahead.
Good luck. My name is Richard Burkhardt. I'm from Fedora, South Dakota. I live in Minor County. I have two quarters in an 80 that I own and an 80 that I rent that this line runs across. At this point in time, I feel like I am being invaded by a foreign country, which would be comparable to a hostile corporate takeover. I feel the state of South Dakota has abandoned the producer of the state by allowing contact with landowners before any South Dakota permits are allowed. I think they shot the gun too early. But in defense of that, it has drawn our attention to the fact of what these people are and how they function, and piqued our interest in finding information out of which we've earned a lot, especially for those of us that haven't signed any easements yet. So it's been a benefit, two-edged sword. Part of the way I feel, because of how I feel about how they've come across the border after us, that we should not be responsible with dealing or bearing with the expense of defending our own land, at least not bear it totally all on ourselves. I think they share a responsibility in that if they are willing to share responsibilities in those matters. In regards to the line and how it affects me, one of the big issues is I have four dugouts within a half mile of this line, and when that line breaks, and if it breaks on my property, it will pollute those four watering dugouts, which are the only source of water within the pastures that I have livestock in. That, in turn, affects over 50% of my pasture available to me, cattle being my primary source of income. I was told that if that happened, I would be reimbursed for the damages, but this does not replace the water. So effectively, what would happen, you would put me out of business. Two of those dugouts are spring-fed. And as I understand the way the laws were written, when these older dugouts were dug, and most of these dugouts are older dugouts, there was government support money when they were constructed. And consequently, and you see these dugouts in fields that used to be pastures that are now work ground, the government requires that those not be filled back in again, and they're using them for a waterfall thing. And I have a problem with this polluting of my water supply. Am I going to have to be responsible for fencing that off even after cleanup so those cattle even if I get an alternative source of water, I'm going to have to keep them out of that one. And I don't think I should have to do this all on my own. I have had conversations with the agent at various times, a couple different agents at this point in time. In the conversations, I've had requests, route changes and such, route changes especially on going diagonally across the crop ground. It's difficult to farm around that, even if it's done in a non-cropping year or part of the year, you're still not going to be able to crop it normally for till that land settles down so you can even go across it. As I understand it from the land agents, the only negotiating power, at least this is what I was told, that they possess is the price of the crop. And my other request, and I've made several since day one, since the first routing survey was taken, especially on the field boundary thing, I've learned that those requests, I never hear a response back as to yes or no or why, yes or no. So I've learned that when I ask, and I make this request every time I meet somebody new from the company, and I already know the answer because they get kind of a blank look on their face, and then I know the answer is no. So it's basically a kind of a my way or the highway attitude. Another point that bothers me, and I was to the ALEC meeting this summer, and the question was brought up to the PUC and the Trans-Canada Pipeline people at that point in time about when their construction in a pasture with livestock in it, that those installation work ground areas be fenced off from existing livestock. The response at that meeting, the response at a later meeting, and a response that I heard today was we're not going to fence livestock out of our work process area. It's just not company policy. And I am deeply offended by that attitude. It's back to my way or the highway again. And if the problem with that is if you lose livestock in that trench, then you've got an evaluation question that we're going to get in an argument about because they're not going to value it the same as I do. So I have a problem with that. And I have problems with other, but I'm not prepared to go into that. A couple things for the PUC to consider, and this was brought up just a minute ago, a posting bond in case of a cleanup necessary within the state. I've seen companies similar to this set up shell companies with no finances to do this with, and words are just words. And as they said before, the bond should be high enough that if it isn't high enough for a cleanup and they're not there to do it, you're going to break counties. County budgets are just going to be gone. There could, in my opinion, be more safety-conscious approach to this. Not being an engineer, it's just a personal observation. They seem to be willing to live with a certain amount of leaks in the line, being cheaper to clean up than putting a pipe instead of a pipe. And we may be first line in the state of many lines coming, but we better be careful about the environment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Berger. I'm sorry. Commissioner Kopich, did you have a question?
Rich. I have a map up here. Could you help me quick?
Sure.
Just for anybody who doesn't know, I've been trying to keep a map of everyone that speaks and where they are on the route. I'm just going to ask his opinion of that.
Mr. Berger and Commissioner Kolbeck have finished their conversation. Other comments? Good evening, sir.
I'm Don Fisher from Britton, South Dakota. And the only comment I want to make is that in support of this gentleman with a green vest on, I can't recall his name, about the posting a substantial bond. When it's left up to somebody else to decide how much money is going to be spent to clean up a mess, it somehow or another takes years. And I've got a mile of this pipeline going through my very good farmland. And I sure don't want a mess not being cleaned up because somebody thinks they haven't got money enough to do it. Well, I really think that should be one of your primary projects, is to make sure that there's some money there to get the job done, you know. And that's about all. Somebody else over here mentioned a bond, too. And, so that's just in support of them. That's what I...
Thanks very much, Mr. Fisher. Appreciate that.
From where?
From Britton. Other comments? Other comments? At this time, my thought for the conclusion of the evening would be twofold. And, of course, if somebody kind of has some comments that they want to offer after that, that's fine. If you've something's occurred to you, or if you got up the courage to step up, we'd be happy to hear you at any time tonight. But if there isn't anybody else who wants to talk, my thought would be we would defer to the applicant, Keystone Pipeline, to see if they have any comments. And then secondly, we would see if the commissioners had any final comments, closing comments for this evening. As long as that roadmap isn't objectionable to anybody, we will go ahead and move that way. Mr. Kennecke, anything for your client?
Just briefly, Commissioner, the hour is late. It's been a long day for all of us, and I've had more time with the microphone than almost anybody. So I appreciate the commissioner's time and attention this week, and certainly here tonight. I appreciate the honest and thoughtful opinions of people from all across the state who are either parties or not, and who've driven out here tonight or during this week to offer those to us. You know, on that first morning, Robert Jones, vice president in charge of the Keystone Project, said Keystone will commit to comply and follow all applicable laws and rules. And that's the case tonight. He just feels that from the very inside of him, and wanted to make sure I got up here and told you that and said that to the people who were listening behind me. And we've talked this week about the use of high-strength steel and fusion bond epoxy coating, just a whole host of advancements that are going to be incorporated into the Keystone pipeline. But most importantly, I think, you know, Keystone's here tonight to listen to these concerns which have been aired, and we'll take them very seriously. Look forward to being a part of this community in South Dakota for a long time. Understand that they're newcomers here, but it's a very heartfelt process of becoming a part of this community and looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kennecke. We're approaching the last call for comments. Okay, with that, we would, Commissioner Kolbeck, any final thoughts, comments on your part?
I just, a common theme through the whole deal has been that some people think that we should look for new energy. Some people think that we should be bringing in different energy. And some things that we do at the commission is actually save energy. And I just wanted to mention that fact that we at the commission understand that new is important, but we also understand that save is important. That's why we recently launched our SD Energy Smart website. And if there's energy saving tips, we're very committed to South Dakota's energy needs, and hopefully that includes saving them. It's just been a very common theme, and I kind of wanted to get our commercial in there for that. That some people just think that we should go away from the old ways of what we do, and we understand that, and we understand new, and we're trying to make the best of both.
Commissioner Hansen.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure each one of the commissioners truly appreciate the fact that you came here this evening, and we recognize that a lot of you traveled a good distance to be here and staying overnight and spending some extra dollars going through a process that you would prefer not to necessarily go through. We also recognize that there's a reason for this, that there are significant challenges that our country faces, and that's why I made the comment I did when Craig Lawrence spoke his piece. I thought he made a very good emotional standpoint and a very very good sensible, practical, factual statement about the challenges that we have in the Middle East, something that isn't anything that the three of us can do anything about directly, but certainly the use of oil, et cetera, is affecting that relationship we have. At the same time, as strongly as emotional as that is, our sons or daughters are fighting for oil. And the fact is that a lot of landowners went through a tremendous amount of turmoil and challenges in their lives and in their ancestors' lives in order to gain control of that land from a standpoint of growing the crops and fighting the weather and all of the other challenges financially that goes along with that. For generations, they've worked that land. And we take that in consideration, too, and we recognize how important that is. None of us here are first generation to South Dakota. We all, in one sense or another, have been part of the soil. We have generations that have homesteaded here, and we recognize how important that is to each and every one of you. We still have people working the farms and ranches in different parts of our state. And the fact is we want to do what's right, and we will weigh things as best as we possibly can. And I know my colleagues will, as I will, vote the way we believe is the right way after we've assessed all that. We know that we never gain friends, it seems like, when we go through situations of this nature. But, you know, nobody came up to us and said, you have to take that job. We ran for this office, and we asked for it, and so now we get the opportunity to make the tough decisions. And I just want you to know that our door will always be open to either side, and regardless of how we vote on this. Matter of fact, I don't know. None of us know. We do believe in the open meetings law, and so we don't sit around and talk about this. So I'm sure we're each very eager to find out what the other ones has to say about it when we get to that point, to that juncture. And I just wanted to let you know that we will definitely vote from a standpoint of what we think is right. And there may not be a left and right on this. There may be some some issues that were presented this evening and certainly in the previous four meetings we've had and in the hearings we've had where we may we'll see how what the discussion is and how we reach conclusions here, but may very well be some middle ground in some areas, and look forward to that opportunity to have that discussion with my colleagues. So thank you all very, very much for the trouble you've taken and the tremendous amount of time that you've taken and expense to make your presentations to us.
Any final comments before we close the public comment meeting tonight? Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Commissioners. I'd like to also thank everybody that showed up here tonight and tell them that I was thinking of them and listening. And
Mr. Jones, I'm sorry. Could you let folks know who you are?
Thank you very much, Dusty. Robert Jones, Vice President of the Keystone Pipeline Project. And I don't want to repeat anything that's been said already, but thank you for inviting me to be here today and listening to these folks. And, you know, I was listening. And I want to commit to them that, you know, this is a growing process and that it's for me to take back and see if we can improve our process as well, because I've heard a lot of feedback today. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jones. By way of closing comment, I would just mention that I certainly support those things that Commissioners Kolbeck and Hansen have mentioned. And I don't think for anybody, whether you're the applicant or landowners or, you know, regulators, this has been frustrating and it has been painful for some of you. And I know that it's not fun for anyone and it's not easy for anyone. But we do appreciate the fact that this time in history and in this place, on this continent, people care about what's going on and they're I want to make their voice heard, and that has not always been the case in all places and all times. So thank you very much for your patience, for your travel time, and your concern. Mr. Smith, anything else we need to do this evening before we adjourn?
No.
Thank you very much. And we stand adjourned.